Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington, working on this program very much. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Tuesday, April 26, 2022. Authorities in Sudan deploy troops to quell intercommunal violence in Darfur.
The council decided to strengthen the security presence in West Darfur by deploying more troops to separate the parties involved in the conflict.
And malaria is still a killer disease in South Sudan.
This child experienced diarrhea last night. So I brought him to the hospital this morning and they found malaria.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The Sudanese Security and Defense Council has deployed additional troops to West Darfur State to maintain law and prevent further intercommunal fighting in Kirinik and the state capital, Jinena. The council says it deeply regrets the loss of life during the fighting and called on humanitarian agencies to provide support to families affected by the fighting. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
Local officials say at least 200 people were killed and dozens of others wounded during weekend clashes between Arab nomads and local farmers in Kirinik locality of West Darfur State. In an emergency meeting yesterday in Khartoum, chaired by Sudan's military leader, General Abdul Fattah al-Burhan, the Sudanese Security and Defense Council commended the measures taken by the West Darfur State Security Committee, regular forces, and security services to prevent further bloodshed. Speaking to reporters shortly after the meeting, Sudanese Defense Minister Yassin Ibrahim Yassin said the council sent more troops to Darfur to intensify patrols and combat thefts and prevent further intercommunal violence. In collaboration with the state authorities, Ibrahim says the troops will be responsible for maintaining law and order and secure easy access for humanitarian agencies to provide aid to people in need.
The council decided to strengthen the security presence in West Darfur by deploying more troops to separate the parties involved in the conflict and contain the situation. Secondly, the council resolved to speed up the implementation of the security arrangements as part of the Juba peace agreement.
Locals in Kirinik say the fighting broke out on Friday following the discovery on April 21st the bodies of two nomads near Hesheba village, about 1 kilometer west of Kirinik town. The fighting spread to the capital, Al-Janena, and continued through last night. Ibrahim says the council supports efforts to preserve the social fabric and directed national agencies and organizations to provide humanitarian aid.
We urge the Sudanese people to play their role in realizing the principle of security as a collective responsibility and preserving social relations from fragmentation in light of the exceptional circumstances the country is going through. The Council stressed that peace is a basic requirement to achieve development and prosperity and cultivate livelihoods.
Speaking to South Sudan in Focus via phone from Al-Janena town this morning, resident Abdul Mahmoud Murtada said the security situation is still tense, with heavy deployment of military land cruiser pickups patrolling the town. Murtada says citizens are still staying indoors.
Public institutions such as offices, banks and organizations are still closed. People are living in fear. And last night we didn't sleep because we expected that the militia would launch an attack on people while asleep.
Another resident, Abdullah Hussein, describes the security situation as unpredictable. Hussein says he fled his home in Al-Janena's Jebel neighborhood with his family of five and sought refuge downtown last night. He says thousands of families are suffering.
Citizens from the suburb areas have all moved downtown, including me and my family. We spent the night with some relatives. We could hear a lot of gunshots last night up to 3 a.m. We are still living in fear and cannot move out.
Will Carter, the Norwegian Refugee Council country director for Sudan, called on all parties to immediately de-escalate and restrain from further violence in a statement released yesterday. Carter said, quote, "Safe and free passage of fleeing civilians and access for humanitarian assistance must be urgently restored," end quote. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
A body monitoring South Sudan's ceasefire says the recent fighting in Unity and Upper Nile states between SPLA-IO factions has affected efforts to achieve permanent ceasefire in the country. The head of the Ceasefire Transitional Security Arrangement Monitoring and Verification Mechanism says ongoing tensions in the two states are threatening the 2018 peace agreement. Dengai Deng has more for VOA from Bor.
Speaking during a monitoring mechanism technical committee meeting in Juba, Chairperson Azra Denero Hamad said tensions between forces loyal to the SPLA-IO faction allied to Simon Gadwich and forces loyal to First Vice President Riek Machar's faction have been fighting in Unity and Upper Nile since February 11th.
Armed clashes between party signatories in Unity and Upper Nile states have significantly undermined the permanent ceasefire. There is tension in Unity State since Mirmir containment site was overrun on 11 February by Kitgwang elements and armed reportedly instigated by the Koch County Commissioner. Consequently, armed clashes spread to Mandate and Lir counties and there were reported of continuous attack from 4th to 8th April by the Koch and Mandate County commissioners on SPLA-IO forces and Lir population in Lir County.
Hamad also says attacks by the wholehearted opposition group National Salvation Front, led by Thomas Cirillo, continue in central and western Equatorial states. He says tensions remain high in Tembura County of western Equatorial state, where fighting that broke out last year displaced nearly 80,000 civilians. SPLA-IO Machar faction spokesperson Colonel Lam Paul Gabriel agrees that the permanent ceasefire is under threat but blames the South Sudan People's Defense Force of violating the ceasefire by attacking SPLA-IO positions in Unity and Upper Nile states. Gabriel says since the SPLA-IO Gadwich faction signed a defection agreement with the SPLM in government in January this year, they have become part and parcel of the SSPDF under the command of President Salva Kiir.
The SPLA-IO has sacrificed so much to make sure this peace is implemented right from the negotiation in 2018 to date. We are now implementing the peace agreement. We are here in Juba and we are adhering to the seasonal hostility agreement which was signed in 2017 December. And up to now, we are making sure that we continue with the implementation of the security arrangement despite all the challenges we are facing. So we, at the end, we are here even after the agreement. We know that the ratio was 50-50, but now because we are being pushed to a corner, we are agreed to go for 40-60. These are all sacrifices we made for this peace to be implemented.
SSPDF spokesperson Major General Lul Rai Kong disputes Hamad's assertion that the general ceasefire is under threat. Kong admits there have been skirmishes between SSPDF and SPLA-IO forces in Unity and Upper Nile State, but says that is no longer an issue.
I would respectfully disagree with his overall assessment that the ceasefire is in danger, because when you say that and then you are putting things together without differentiating them, ceasefire would be in danger if the two parties to the agreement are in serious hostilities, SPDF and SPLA-IO. Yes, I'm in agreement with everybody that we have experiences of low-scale fighting in some of the areas you had mentioned. But these incidents have been contained.
Suba Samuel, a spokesperson of the National Salvation Front, says the NAS is not adhering to any ceasefire because it was already violated by the government in Juba.
It is very, very unfortunate that the citizens are still claiming that they are monitoring what is called ceasefire in South Sudan. First of all, in our own assessment, in a basic assessment, in the eyes of each and every South Sudanese, there is no ceasefire going on in the country. nor even implementation of the agreement. But what I know is that all these wars, especially in Upper Nile, are facilitated by Juba.
Samuel denies the NAS was involved in any recent skirmishes. Chual Dengthon, a spokesperson of the Kidwang faction, denies his group have been fighting the SPLA-IO Machar faction in Unity and Upper Nile State. Thon says the fighting in Unity State's Lare and Mayendit counties was between communities which support the government and the SPLA-IO Machar faction.
There are supporters of the SPLA mini government and supporters of the SPLA-IO of Riek Machar. These are the people fighting now in Unity State, and they are fighting on the tribal lines. We are not part of that.
In a statement released yesterday, the UN mission in South Sudan said at least 72 civilians were killed and 64 women and girls were raped between February and April in Unity State's Lare County. Hunmis Chief Nicholas Asim said human rights violations were documented during a search in violence carried out by armed youth from Kot and Mayendit counties. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaiding, reporting from Bor.
The Catholic Diocese of Rumbek has welcomed a verdict by the High Court in Juba which sentenced a Catholic priest and three others to years in prison for attempted assassination of Bishop Christian Kalesari of the Catholic Diocese of Rumbek. For VOA News, Viola Elias has this report from Juba.
The Juba court sentenced Father John Mathiang to 7 years in prison and sentenced Samuel Maker to a 5 years prison term. The court also sentenced Maurice Sebit Ater and Let Makura Gok to 4 years in prison. Following last night's sentencing, Bishop Christian Kalazar of the Catholic Diocese of Rumbek sent out a press statement saying he appreciated government's and the court's commitment to justice. Bishop Kalazar said, and I quote, "Though sad for what has happened and the resulting suffering, we pray that truth may bring conversion and healing," end quote. Presiding Judge Alexander Subek Samuel said the court found John Mathiang Makol, Samuel Maker, Maurice Sebit Ater and Lath Makura Gok guilty of participating directly and indirectly in the attempted murder of Bishop Kalazar.
The final prison sentence of the accused, John Mathiang, Maurice Sebit Ater and Lath Makura Gok, were found guilty of breaking two articles, 334 section 4, 335 of the Penal Code of 2008.
Defense lawyer Malit Mading, who represent all four men found guilty of attempted murder, says the verdict and sentencing are not based on any evidence. Under Section 34 of South Sudan Evidence Act, Mading says an accused person should not be convicted on the basis of evidence that implicates another person. He says his clients will appeal.
Normally, the confession of accused are used as a weaker evidence, in the sense that they have not been tested. The first accused was not cross-examined. The defense team was not given chance to test the validity of the first accused statement. There are several cases that have been decided in a way that the confession of co-accused is not used against the other accused.
Mading says the accused and the defense team were not given a chance to provide additional facts before last night's sentencing. Bishop Christian Kalazar, who at the time of the incident in April last year was bishop-elect of Rumbek Catholic Diocese, was shot by gunmen inside his residence in Rumbek town. Kalazar was transported to a hospital in Nairobi where he spent months receiving treatment before being discharged in June 2021. He was consecrated as bishop in March. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, malaria is still a killer disease in South Sudan. Find out why after the break.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands with soap and water or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa Center for Disease Control. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. And in our Tuesday health segment, we take a look at children and malaria in South Sudan. South Sudan's Ministry of Health and World Health Organization say they are preparing to roll out the RTSS anti-malaria vaccine in hopes of saving millions of lives. The World Health Organization says malaria is the leading cause of illness in South Sudan and kills 2 out of 10 infected children under the age of 5. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
Jennifer Joseph says she just learned her one-year-old tested positive for malaria at the Al Sabah Children's Hospital in Juba. The hospital is crowded with mothers holding young sick children on their laps, waiting for test results or to see a doctor. Joseph says her baby became ill yesterday.
This child experienced diarrhea last night, so I brought him to the hospital this morning and they found malaria. This is not the first time for him to be sick of malaria. It has been there before.
Viola George, another mother waiting for her child's test results at the hospital, says malaria has been constant in her family, and every time someone falls ill, the cost of treatment is high.
I have had malaria before, and I don't know the sickness of this child, whether it is malaria or something else. Last time he was sick, I was able to pay like 12,000 South Sudanese pounds. I had to pay this money for the treatment of my child. Whether it is a lot or little, there is nothing I can do since it is the treatment of my child.
The World Health Organization says a child dies of malaria every 2 minutes. Speaking at the World Malaria Day event in Juba yesterday, the WHO's country representative in South Sudan, Fabian Denzako, says malaria is a major health challenge, including in South Sudan.
In South Sudan, malaria is number one disease causing a high morbidity and mortality. And from the data that we have from the ministry coming from health facilities, between 60-70% of all outpatient consultation is actually because of malaria.
Over the past few years, health experts have tried to eliminate malaria, as scientists have developed a malaria vaccine, says Ndenzako.
This malaria vaccine will be used to prevent malaria, particularly among children aged 6 months to 5 years, who live in moderate to high transmission settings, including South Sudan.
More than 1 million children in Ghana, Kenya, and Malawi have now received one or more doses of the world's first malaria vaccine, in a pilot program coordinated by the World Health Organization. South Sudan's health ministry says the country is working with health partners to be able to secure malaria vaccine doses. Hamid Jula is the manager of the South Sudan National Malaria Control Program at the health ministry.
We in the South Sudan, we are really very blessed with the partners that can assist us and the leadership of the Minister of Health that they talk to the World Health Organization South Sudan office. So these vaccines, once come to South Sudan, will encourage all the children to be vaccinated.
Until the vaccine arrives, South Sudan Health Minister Yolanda Awilding encourages all South Sudanese to adhere to simple ways of preventing malaria.
Sleeping under treated mosquito net is simplest way, and it is the economical sufficient way for every citizen of South Sudan to actually implement. Ministry of Health, with the help from the partners, we have got treated malaria nets for the household that cannot afford to buy their own. It is widely available, and we highly encourage the families to sleep under treated mosquito net.
The WHO says the vaccine is one of several ways to prevent the spread of malaria. Other methods include clearing of bushes and draining stagnant water. The theme for this year's World Malaria Day is harness innovation to reduce the malaria disease burden and save lives. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayer in Juba.
Still on malaria, studies show Africa carries an extremely high share of the global burden of malaria. In 2020, the region accounted for 95% of all cases and 96% of deaths. With the help of vaccine, more than 1 million children have received the four-dose COS malaria vaccine in Kenya, Ghana, and Malawi, where the pilot trials of the drug are being carried out. Maureen Ojiambo reports.
In 2020, an estimated 627,000 people around the world died of malaria. Most were young children in sub-Saharan Africa below the age of 5, accounting for 80% of all malaria deaths in the region. Tedros Ghebreyesus is the Director General for the World Health Organization.
Today is an historic day. Today, WHO is recommending the broad use of the world's first malaria vaccine. This is a breakthrough for science, child health, and malaria control.
What we have right now is a vaccine that can be deployed, that it's accepted, that it's safe, and that can have a massive impact.
The WHO is calling for investments and innovation that might bring new vector control approaches, diagnostic, anti-malarial medicines, and other tools to speed the pace of progress against malaria. Mashidiso Moet is the organization's regional director for Africa.
For centuries, malaria has stalked sub-Saharan Africa, causing immense personal suffering. The RTSS vaccine is a game changer, and it's arriving at the right time.
In Africa, Nigeria, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Tanzania, and Mozambique account for over half of malaria deaths worldwide. According to WHO, there was 12% increase in cases in East Africa. At least 3.5 million Kenyans contract the disease each year. Kenya is among three countries in Africa where children have received the four-dose malaria vaccine. Kenya's health ministry says it will expand the use of drug following positive reviews from a pilot program coordinated by the WHO. Rashid Aman is Kenya's health chief administrative secretary.
I'm pleased to announce that the ministry has received a positive advisory from the Kenya National Immunization Technical Advisory Group to expand the use of malaria vaccine within the Lake Endemic Region. This means that more sub-counties within the Lake Endemic Region will now be able to vaccinate children with the vaccine starting June this year.
According to the 2020 World Malaria Report, despite the progress that has been made in the fight against malaria in the East African community, the region is still struggling to fight the disease. Kenya is blaming the upsurge of the disease in the region on failing single country efforts in the management of the illness. Aman says there are a lot of challenges.
The fight against malaria is constantly facing challenges, both existing and emerging, that include increased resistance of the parasite to the commonly used first-line anti-malaria drugs over time, increased resistance of malaria-spreading mosquitoes to insecticides used to control them, importation of new invasive species of malaria-spreading mosquitoes.
East African countries are reported to have contributed a significant proportion of the malaria burden worldwide. Uganda's health minister in charge of general duties, Anifa Kawoya, says her country is working towards continuous engagement with the ESC secretariat in the fight against the illness.
This will enable us to achieve our vision, malaria-free across borders, our vision eventually to have a zero malaria tolerance in East African region.
The WHO is looking towards achieving global targets of reducing both malaria cases and mortality rates by at least 90%, eliminating the disease in at least 35 countries, and preventing its resurgence in all countries that are malaria-free by 2030. Reporting for VOA, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Sacramento, California.
As the world's attention is largely focused on the Russia invasion of Ukraine, the situation in Sudan has been stagnant. Fadi Al-Kaidi, official spokesperson for the UN mission in Sudan, said the UN is calling on the military leaders in Sudan to promote the political process, including an end to violence, the release of political detainees, and a firm commitment to phase out the state of emergency in the country. But Joseph Stigley, director of research at Africa Center for Strategic Studies, explains to VOA's senior analyst Mohammed Al-Ashanawi that international pressure is badly needed on the leaders in Sudan to commit to a democratic transition.
The coup leaders are trying to create the impression, international community, that there are no alternatives other than the military government in Sudan. In effect, you know, they're trying to normalize this idea that military and government and in Sudan is the only way forward. You know, and this, of course, is something that the protesters are trying to change. And as we have seen, not just in the last couple of years, but over the last couple of decades, that military rule in Sudan has been disastrous for the country in terms of its economic standing. And the country on its current trajectory faces only more and deepening crisis and instability. So, you know, this latest threat against UNITAM, you know, it symbolizes that the junta feels emboldened. They're trying to put pressure on international actors to go along with the military's plan to hold on to power. And so I think absolutely the only way things are going to change is if the international community pushes back. And they signal very clearly, formally, to the junta that they won't be recognized, that there isn't going to be any substantial international investment in Sudan until the military resumes the democratic process and brings the civilians back in so that we can have the prospect for a civilian-led government in Sudan. So I think we're very much at another point where there's a test for the international actors about how committed they are to the democratic process in Sudan, and for that matter, to the stabilization of Sudan.
But with the continued popular protests, the military rulers in Sudan are continuing their grip on power, regardless of the pressure from the IMF, World Bank, US. What's the way out then?
Well, I think it is important to recognize that there are continuing protests in Sudan. The military government is widely despised, and they have lost all trust with the population once they reneged on their agreement to facilitate a transition to a civilian-led government. So they've lost the trust of the population. And moreover, there's no way out for the military. They're effectively on a sinking ship because of the huge economic crisis that Sudan faces, something that is going to require a lot of international support. And that international support is not going to be forthcoming until there's a credible technocratic-led civilian government in Sudan. So I think the way out is for that message to be clearly communicated to the junta, and for the junta to be led to reaccept the reestablished civilian-led democratic transition, and resuming and reverting to the military's traditional roles, which are to provide security for the country and for citizens in Sudan.
That's Joseph Stigley, the Director of Research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies. He was speaking to VOA's senior analyst Mohammed Al-Ashanawi. That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday. We now end the show with Crazy Fox and the song Anna Guide. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for taking time to be with us this evening. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Someone please come give me a